I wrote down a few questions here. Yes, I followed your Instagram for quite a while. Yeah. And one thing that I've noticed is that you have a good eye for photography as well.
Thank you.
And a lot of creators, whether they be musicians or photographers or poets, or especially people that sort of have their foot dipped in two of those pools, you can see some similarities between their work. Like Gregory Alan Isakoff is a great example. The photos he shares on social media, you see them and think, well, this makes sense. This comes from Gregory. You get a lot of similar vibes. So my first question is, do you feel like when you're out in the world, whether it be taking pictures or just like roaming around in a town like this, do you see the world through the same lens that you write songs with? Are you constantly looking for songs in the world around you?
Yeah, I think so. I think, I think it's almost the opposite, actually. It's like, I am constantly trying to make sense of it. And I'm also constantly trying to help everyone else make sense of it. And so singing is like what helps me make sense of it. It makes me feel better. And it seems ideally that singing to the people would do have the same effect. And so I think what I'm doing as I'm going through is you're just constantly working out your own shit and the world shit. And so you're like, what's the best way to put this into words? And so the music, I always said, like, the music is more just a, channel for me to get it. Because if I went on speaking tours, I don't think I would get much, you know, action. And so I love music, and I always have. But when I started really getting into it, that's always like my second or third consideration, you know. And really it's lyrically and thematically what I'm trying to say. So yeah, as I walk around, it's more of a way of just every day, what's something new that I can say that will help solve this old problem, you know.
I think it's a very powerful message too. I believe it was on your website, someone said that the most amazing part about your music is that it helps to someone not to feel alone in the world.
Yeah, I think that's really important to remember, is that sometimes people get too focused on like writing like the happy song or like telling someone everything's gonna be okay, and that's fine, but that's not necessarily true, you know what I mean? But as we go through these heartaches, I have found that rather than someone telling me like you're gonna be fine, it's more important for me to realize that other people are going through it too, and then I will see them get fine. And that will be more strength than just somebody saying it. You know, that makes sense?
That does make sense. As someone that has traveled around the country a lot and toured a lot, you said that one of your biggest inspirations is human interaction, and that as long as you're meeting new people, you'll always have new things to write about.
Yeah.
And someone that's written songs like Resurrection Bay or Mr. Tambourine Man, what kind of people and what kind of stories across the world speak to you the most as a songwriter?
I mean, it really, all of them, but I know that's a vague answer. But yeah, I think stories of just like what I was talking about, stories of you know, down and up, you know, stories of overcoming things, stories that somehow highlight the darkness, and then ideally some sort of light. But sometimes not. Sometimes the light isn't always there, and that's okay. I just really like people's personal realizations and journeys and how they come through in all the different ways. But also that's what's relatable to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's what's funny. I joke about this a lot, but at the merch table, often someone will be like, I got a song for you. And it's like a terrible idea for a song. It's like, it's like something very specific to them that happened, you know, that's funny or whatever. You know, like people make fun of the Alanis Morissette Ironic song a lot. Do you know that song from the 90s? Isn't it ironic?
Oh, yeah.
Because she lists all these things that aren't necessarily irony. But I can see Alanis Morissette being like, oh, one of the lines is like, a traffic jam when you're already late. You know, I can see someone, her being like, wow, I'm in a traffic jam and I'm late. That's like a song, you know. It's like 10,000 spoons, but all you need is a knife. You know, there's like little things like that. It's not irony. It's more just like fuck moments, you know.
Yeah.
But I know that thought process. So it's funny how sometimes you're like, that's a good song. And then you're like, no, it's not. Although that, to sort of contradict myself, traffic jam when you're already late, that is something that's very universal, we can all relate to. But what is that? It doesn't do anything for us, you know?
Yeah.
Because all she just says is, isn't it ironic? Don't you think?
It's like, Ray.
Great song. So good.
Just not so ironic.
Not so ironic.
But relatable, especially after today.
I suppose coming so.
Through Roanoke.
Yeah.
The songs that are about people, that come from human interaction, songs like those, songs like about Van Gogh and about his hoe, versus your more introspective songs, do you approach those in different ways, or do they sort of come from the same place?
I think from the same place. I don't know. It's hard to say. I think with each song, it comes from its own place, but also it's a similar process for me, really. You know, I think it's interesting to me when it's like, there's two categories. This happened to me or this didn't. That's really what it is. Those are my songs. And so if it didn't, it's often easier because there's less to like mine, you know? It's like, I mean, so for the Van Gogh ear song, I had to sort of, you know, figure that out, but it was easy because it was like the guard at the museum tells me the story. I'm able to like work that out. But then the song you just quoted, the Vondel Park, you know, that's me and my experience. So that takes a little bit more of compiling my life and figuring out what I want to say and what I don't. Does that make sense?
You know? It does. So are those more difficult, the introspective ones?
I think so. Only because it's a matter of how much you want to share and also not knowing if it's relatable. You know what I mean? Whereas if I'm writing about Van Gogh's ear, that's easy because everyone knows who that is and everyone seems to care about Van Gogh. But I don't know if anyone cares about me, you know, and that understandably so. And I think that's the thing too. When you're writing about your emotions, that's when you want to kind of check yourself because some things are petty and some things aren't. I mean, they're all not petty to us.
Yeah.
And also, you don't want to get caught. I don't want to get caught in any kind of rut of songwriting, which, as we all know, some artists, it's just like, here's another breakup song or here's another, whatever. Every artist has like, not, some artists just have their like pattern. And it's always been important to me to not get into that in this, you know, in a sense. So.
Is it hard to sort of strike that balance when you're writing an introspective song between sharing your experiences that you think are related or are relatable to the world and just sort of exposing the things you've been through? That seems like it would be a very intimidating thing to go around the country and singing sad songs about your feelings.
It takes some getting used to, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
One thing I've noticed about your music, and always have enjoyed, is that certain songs, like I Am California, can embody the connotation and personality of certain places. And a lot of people say that's sort of a definitive song about California that captures the melancholy. And even albums like Montana Tell and The Apocalypse Is Over sort of have this personification of a place. How much does location impact your music? Does it sort of work its way in there?
Very much so, I think. Yeah, I think when you... Traveling was so important to me when I was young because I wasn't doing it, and I would dream about it a lot. And so I think I was able to create so many fantasies of these different locations. And then so once I started to tour, it was like, you know, having this treasure map, and you were getting to kind of go to New Orleans or Missoula, you know, New York City or whatever. And it kept me very open to discovery there. As we all know, people... you know, sometimes knock tourists because you can go to New Orleans and just go to like Bourbon Street, you can go to Times Square in New York, and then you can have like whatever that experience. But those places are catered to make you feel like this generic travel thing, right? You know, like, I'm at the thing, I got the shirt that said I'm here, I drank the drink of this place, whatever, now I'm gone. But I was lucky that I, with this job especially, you get into... And especially in the early days when you're just playing random bars or coffee shops, you find yourself, it's usually not going to be on that, in that part of town. And so I would find myself with locals or in a weird part of town and just sort of forced to discover all these different things and meet these characters. So location is important for all of those things, I think, if that makes sense.
It does. I think that really stands out too. It feels like you sort of bring us along in that journey of discovery and sort of the realer side of places. Is there a place that you've wanted to visit or explore in song, or that you haven't got to yet?
Almost every place, really. I'm trying to think. What's on the top of my list right now? There's a place called Namibia, which is like the southwest of Africa. I've been very obsessed with that lately. I've been to Morocco once, but I want to explore that more. I was really inspired there. Lots of parts of Eastern Europe and Southern Europe that I haven't been to yet. Greece and Poland, Budapest, and those would be the main places, I think, culture that I'd like to experience. The rest would be just sort of pretty places. But as far as the States, I feel that I've been very thorough with it. Not that there's not more to discover, but early on I was able to kind of just, because of that, I had that freedom of no management, no anything. So I was just like, I'm going to Bismarck, North Dakota. I got a gig, you know, and that's all you need. Just need a gig.
It's a free. Sounds like a very free way to live. Very fun way to live.
Yeah, it's the finances are low, you know. Free is one, yeah, for sure. But you figure it out. Ideally.
What is this part of the country? Appalachia, Virginia, North Carolina. What's that always? Is there anything about this area that stands out to you?
That's good. Yeah, you know, I haven't done a ton. I've been around here a lot. I haven't done a ton of exploring. But, it's very beautiful, and it's very, old school. I like the East Coast in general because of this sort of, I grew up in Los Angeles, so I have that West Coast thing, which is sort of, we're like the children of America, and I feel like you're kind of visiting your parents' home area. If you like sort of analyze America as sort of like a family, this is like the grandparents or whatever land over here. So, and I think for music too, East Coast is just, you know, is the origin of most of our American music, or at least the versions, you know, especially the folk music. And so I love going to Greenwich Village. I love coming out, yeah, to this part of the country, down to New Orleans and Chicago and things like that. So you can feel that in the air. And that's kind of what it's been for me.
One thing that amazed me, No Rain, No Rose is a fantastic record.
Thank you. And
beautifully made.
Thank you.
It's such a beautiful sound. But I read that you recorded that in the house that you were living with sort of musicians that would come and go. And at first that blew my mind away that such a record could come from that environment. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought people here, I think, can really relate to that sort of communal identity coming together and producing great music in that sort of setting. So my question is, does making music like that sort of change the final product, or how does that affect the process?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I love studio records. I love to have them. I love to listen to them. I don't love making them because it's very counterintuitive to my normal thing, which is to like go in front of an audience, tell my story, respond to them, they respond to me, you know. And so from the day one, I always approached recording as how can I make this as natural as possible. So I've always done mostly live takes, you know, in some sort of space that, whether it's a studio or not, that I can feel. Like, I've never been one to like, okay, I'm going to play the guitar. Now I'll bring the drummer in, you know. Not that there's anything wrong with that. And some of my favorite records do that. But for me, it wouldn't work. So with No Rain, No Rose, I had the ability to have it at my own house, which I never had before. And I had talked to drums, bass, to come over and for the week. But the rest of it, I wasn't sure. And I also just didn't know how the song should be. You know what I mean? Like every other album, I was like, okay, this album's going to be like my electric guitar album, or this album's going to be my New Orleans album, whatever. This one, I was just like, I don't know how to produce this one. So it was just by really nice luck that a lot of my Portland musician friends that I just made were in town that week. And it just kind of got, I thought, you know, it would be good if we got Brad on this one. It's called Brad Up, you know. And then Brad would come, and then I just had enough snacks, I think, for everybody, you know. So they stuck around. There's enough weed and coffee and snacks. And so, and then all of a sudden, somebody like, well, where's Shook? Are Shook Twins back yet? And then we like called Shook Twins over. And Gregory was there, and the guys from Fruition were there, and Bevan from Trout Steak was able to come out. And so, it just, after the first day, I remember thinking, like, asking the guys, like, can you come over tomorrow? And it was just sort of whoever, you know, if Brad was there, then let's do the Brad shit. Like, if Jay's here, let's get him going. And it just became this weird little factory. And at nighttime, we would just play the songs, you know. And then during the day, we kind of work on overdubs and things like that and talk about production styles. But Yeah, so it was not my initial thought, although the house was for sure, and a couple guys together, but the way that it came about, and I think it's a cool, I really like it. It's a cool record. It's a little random at times. You know, you'll go from like a bluegrass song to you know, not a bluegrass song or
Yeah.
whatever. And that was just because Taylor, sorry, Tyler from Fruition played really good banjo, you know, and he was the drummer. And so we were playing this song, a song called Broken on there that is, I didn't know how to, it's just a folk song. He's on the drums, and I was like, yeah, this doesn't sound like a drum song. You just pick up a banjo and lay down this sick, like, ding, 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 ding. And I was like, let's do it like that. And it just happened, you know. And we all, Bart, the engineer, had this one mic that we could stand around, which made, I think, also, that allowed for more freedom because it'd be like, okay, to put that down, take this, as opposed to like, let's re-mic a whole thing, you know. So that, I don't mean to overanswer your question, but yeah,
That's
that
okay.
was part of it for sure.
I think that whole process is really interesting because it is a really unique record and it's a really diverse record.
Yeah.
And you really get a sense of the whole process that went behind it. I love the fact that there's so much of the essence of being there that's in the record, the
yeah
conversations. And I think that goes a long way. And it makes it feel almost more like a live performance than a studio record.
well, that was what's cool too, is because Bart had that one mic, we were able to just roll the recording without using too much data, or we had a tape machine for some of it. And so when we would listen back, we got kind of used to the little ins and outs and stuff, and we kept saying like, okay, when it's mastering time, we'll cut them. But we got so like just attached to these little things that when it came time, we just never cut them. Bart just would, he'd always send me the mix with that attached. And we just never said anything. And finally, when it was mastering time, I just said to Bart, I was like, hey, I think I'm just going to keep these in. He's like, I think you should. And my manager was pretty pissed at first, because it makes it very annoying for things like Spotify, radio, anything that's not like the actual vinyl. But I don't give a fuck, you know.
Yeah.
And people, I knew they would like it because I had already released my live album, which had the stories, which I knew people were into. So I wasn't as worried if I was a more Fleet Foxy or like more romantic type band, I might have been a little more concerned, but nobody gives a shit, you know. So Craigie, they want to hear Craigie in the studio. And I wanted to tell that story too. You know, if I couldn't, like, I'm sitting here telling you, but I can't go to every person who's listening to it and tell them. But I think they get the point when they listen, and that's other than just me chiming in going, this was in our house, you know.
Yeah,
It should be weird.
I think that point does come across.
Yeah, I hope so.
Has your perspective changed any since, like, going from someone that used to tour a lot and then becoming a Portland resident? Has that transition sort of impacted how you make music or how you look at it?
Not really, because when I became a Portland resident, it didn't shift my touring up that much. It just shifted up my sanity a little bit, because I was able to have a place to like put a few things, and my merch was able to grow a lot because in those van days I had to keep a very limited amount of merch, which would mean I'd sell out really fast, and then, you know, like, it was just chaotic. So, not really, and I don't really write that much at home. I need to be in it to be writing, so the touring is where the only danger of Portland is that I would get too comfortable, which I haven't yet, but that would be my concern.
So what's next for John Craigie?
Yeah.
What's like, is there a muse you've been chasing or a goal on the horizon?
I got a new record that I think I was telling you that's gonna come out in the spring, and we're just figuring out how to release it. That was another one that was recorded in a different house. And this one is even more housey, you know, in the sense of we did everything live. This was a little more calculated because nobody knows. So I told them where I was going to be for a week. So we had a little bit more. Still, people were coming and going, but I knew what I wanted to do. I'm very excited for that one to come out. And so I'm just trying to be strategic with that. And yeah, I'm going to Europe in January. Let's see, big fall tour I'm excited for, and that those are sort of the main things on the horizon right now for me.
I don't want to go the entire interview without mentioning Jack Johnson.
Yeah, please. Yeah,
That seems like it had to be such an amazing experience. What was the most memorable aspect of that whole thing?
that's a good question. You know, it was also surreal. And it still is. I tell people sometimes who maybe just meet me or something, and they don't believe me, and I say, yeah, I don't blame you. Like, it doesn't make any sense. But I just think that getting to take a look, I felt very privileged that I got to take a look into that world, from a very unique lens, because I think that most people who get to that world either get shot in there really quick, because of the pop machine, or like are overloaded with all of the fame that's coming at them. And I've been able to go so slow that I've been able to, as it grows and grows, I've been able to sort of take it each step by step. So I came into that very like calm, and I didn't have much to worry about, because it wasn't like there was that much on the line for me other than just like play a good show, you know. So I think the most memorable would have been like things like playing the Gorge or something like that. 22,000 I think sold out, and just taking the moment to sort of comprehend that, and it's a really unique and powerful thing to speak to that many people, I felt very lucky to be able to do that. So those things were very memorable, and just navigating through that world. And Jack was so kind. That's his world, you know. He's been living in that forever, and so he was very nice to me, sort of like ushering me in, and kind of like also being like, you do whatever you want, you know. Because that's when he asked me to do it. I didn't know if he's gonna make me get a band or something, or change my show in any way, you know, because his crowd is sweeter than mine, and like more family and stuff like that. And I asked him, I said, do you want me to not cuss? Do you want me to not talk about drugs? Do you want me to, you know, not talk about sex? Like, you know, not that I'm like was selling out. I just was like, I wanted to see what he was gonna say to that. And he just said, you be you, man. And I really appreciate that. And it worked out, I think, you know.
He seems like such a cool person.
Yeah.
Last question.
Yeah.
More of a broad question. In 2019, what's the role of the folk singer?
Yeah. Kind of like going back to the beginning, what we were talking about, I think of, it's like, it's the same it's always been. You know, you're almost like a reporter. You're two things. You're a reporter in that you go out, you learn what's going on, and then you translate it to something that's digestible. But you're also the minstrel, you know. You're also, you go from town to town with the stories. And I guess, which is also a version of a reporter, but you're there to entertain them in a way that they can project a lot on you because you're going. And they can also, they're open to like listening to you because you're going, you know. And that's how I feel a lot. I feel very, I did a show last summer at Pickathon, which is a festival in Oregon. They have a stage that's in the woods. You're on like this stage made of wood. There's branches all over you, and it's this sort of bowl. And there's very little stuff in that area that would just make it feel like a modern thing. You know what I mean? There's obviously a microphone you're singing into, but everything's really well hidden. And I had this weird flashback, not to sound too like metaphysical, but I just remember thinking like people who did what I did, you know, centuries before, like this is how they would have done it. They would have had the field, and it felt very nice to know that this job will always be necessary, and that I'm just doing my part. I'm just happy to have the job. So.